Hi, everybody.
That's brutal.
All right, so Sean, president of the Marshawn Lynch Fan Club, Towie, and I are office mates here at FSU, and as his wife, Erin, is quick to observe, neither of us has anything close resembling an inside voice. So God help any of you on that fourth floor trying to take your exams. Also, a little known fact about Sean, have you accepted Marshawn Lynch into your life today, Towie? His favorite movie is Dead Poets Society. So, after the show tonight, be sure to shake his hand, look him dead in the eye, and say, Captain, my captain. I promise you there will be tears, but I can't promise you what kind they'll be. As you may or may not know, Sean, we should change the Washington State flag to Marshawn's jersey, Towie, grew up in Tacoma. Once working his way through seminary school, now he is here in Tallahassee working on his PhD in creative fiction with his wife Erin and his lovely little daughter Evelyn. He has work published or forthcoming in Barrel House, Chicago Quarterly Review, Sport Literate, the Minnesota Review, Hobart, Word Riot, The Rumpus, and many others. He was a semi-finalist for the St. Lawrence Book Award at Black Lawrence Press, and here at Florida State, he was the recipient of a 2016 Emerging Writer Award chosen by Deborah Monroe. Sean's fiction is direct, blunt, full of what is sought in lonely times, but not when we are among altars or symbols or aesthetics. Instead, his routes cut through alleyways and under the highway's off-ramp to rusted old paint, keeping a room unused and sealed shut, to what we find across the tracks on the asphalt seasoned with cigarette butts and rolled up in stripper glitter. It's graphic, isn't it? Sean gives story to the poorly lit souls who are less concerned with abstracting some difference between stealing and earning a dollar, but made perhaps all the more human because of it. These are the losers and their portraits as they fall from the walls. But those portraits, nonetheless, now made more real because they have jettisoned the formal pretense of social graces and false propriety. They take us in not so many words to where the heart is. These stories, then, engage us with the classic problem in fiction, the fight for authenticity. But with the vulgar firmly in hand, they purposely remind us that all of this is really an alley fight. The narrative voice is casual, sidled up to the bar next to you, sometimes in wild celebration of that joy that we all find in talking some shit. But quickly it turns to something compressed, thinned, fatigued, because it cannot muster the heart to speak the truth, which will only cripple. Scratch on it a bit and pull back just an inch or so of the surface, and you will see beneath the broken windshield an engine throttled in the interrogative mood, sincerely driving among vacant highway exits in hope of a happy ending it long since stopped believing. They are rewarding narrative snapshots, and I find Sean's stories bring us to rest in parking lots where the visitors come to agreement that the lines are merely suggestions. Yet, somehow, magical maybe, chaos has not ensued. This is to say obedience to a code, to a standard, to abstracts and ideals quickly slides away. And if we can say any such allegiance rises in its place, it would have to come from what you learn from the immediate, that concrete person falling down drunk in front of you. If I may be so bold as to make a suggestion, I recommend you always read Sean's stories under the corrugated light of the street lamp. And now, please join me in welcoming my dear friend, Sean. It's not what Marshawn Lynch can do for you, but what you can do for Marshawn. Towie to the stage.
Gonna trust my glass on this thing.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much to Paige. That was really fantastic. The pilot cutting the engine off to listen to the rain on the wings, that hit me right in the heart, right? And thank you to Tom, Julie, for the wonderful introduction. It was funny when you were saying, like, I was like, oh, these characters aren't losers, they're people like me. That's what I was thinking when you said that, which is sort of sad. But anyway, I'm going to read a story. It's called Bad Teeth. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day, but it's also Ash Wednesday, which is a weird convergence of Hallmark and Catholicism. Also, Easter Sunday is landing on April Fool's Day. With everything else going on, I feel like cash out the retirement accounts. We don't have much longer. But anyway, this is a love story set in a strip club, so I thought it was kind of worked. It's called Bad Teeth. Bunny walked up to the bar and winked at Too Tall, who poured them both a shot of Jameson, even though he wasn't a bartender and they weren't supposed to drink on the job. "You're a gentleman and a scholar," she said. "There ain't many of us left," replied Too Tall. She drained the shot and wiped her lips. She was one of several busty brunettes, but Bunny was the only stripper at Why Buy the Cow Gentleman's Club missing a leg. Doctors had to amputate it when she was a kid after she got it crushed underneath a tractor tire. That night, she was wearing the 1920s retro fake she bought online. Black leather straps and laces attached the contraption to her thigh. "I walked away with $20 twice last week," said Bunny. "I should have taken that offer from DeMay Tech. I'd clean your teeth right up." There weren't many people Too Tall that talk about his broken mouth, but Bunny was one of them. His teeth were brown and gray and stuck out in all different directions, like a picket fence after a tornado. They made it difficult for him to speak clearly, and he had to repeat himself a lot. Not to mention that eating was a disaster, shreds of food always caught in places his tongue couldn't reach. He mostly stuck to French fries. He never ate popcorn. A year back, he went to a free dental clinic held in Lincoln Elementary's gym, and the dentist said he wasn't chewing his food all the way, which would eventually destroy his stomach lining. That's how he said it, too, destroy his stomach lining. As he got older, Too Tall could look forward to a world full of ulcers. He surveyed the crowd. A few guys stood in the pit and looked with haphazard interest at the dancers gyrating to Hotten Her. Others sat at the tables and booths, barely visible in the glittering darkness. Blue lights refracted off disco balls and mirrors. In the VIP section above and to the left of the stage, Steve O'Leary chatted with a few of the salesmen from the car dealership he owned. "I'm gonna go rub my tits on O'Leary's giant head," said Bunny. "Have fun," said Too Tall. He decided to check the parking lot. Embra, the cultural mecca of East Central Illinois, was coal and corn country. Pickups decorated the gravel lot, and there were some Toyotas, too, owned by the guys who commuted to the oil refinery. Too Tall took a deep breath of autumn air. He didn't need a jacket quite yet. Then he heard a woman's voice. "If it isn't Too Tall, McElroy." He didn't recognize her until she stepped under the security light. "Oh my God, Iris?" In the flesh. He could smell that same sweet coconut fragrance when they hugged. Iris Washington had not been the most beautiful girl at Embra County High School, but she'd been in the top five. She gave him a Valentine's Day card junior year, and even though she signed it "Your Friend," he still kept it in a shoebox along with a playbill from the time she played the baker's wife in Into the Woods. "What are you doing here?" he asked. "I mean, it's good to see you. What are you doing here?" "It's good to see you too," she said. "I'm here to dance, I hope." It was then he noticed the light gray stain on her white jacket with the faux fur collar. Her jeans were stylish but threadbare around the upper thighs and pockets. Dark red curls flowed down to her shoulders. Her almond eyes were a little far apart, sort of frog-like, but her cheekbones could have been carved out of a mountainside. "You moved back from L.A.?" he asked. He made like he was stroking his beard, but really he was using his giant hand to cover his hideous teeth. She smiled like it hurt. "L.A. didn't work out." Like always, Too Tall had said exactly the wrong thing. He cursed himself. O'Leary stumbled outside with a cigarette in his mouth. When he saw Iris, he puffed out his chest and hiked up his jeans. "I heard redheads screw like banshees," he said. "Wouldn't you like to know?" she replied. O'Leary scanned her up and down like he was appraising a trade-in and then walked away toward his Kelly Green Escalade. "Sorry about that," said Too Tall. "He's a nice enough guy, just a little drunk." "Something I haven't seen before," she said. Too Tall brought Iris inside. Harrison, the club manager, hired her on the spot. When Too Tall got back to his apartment that night and sat on the rose-patterned love seat he inherited from his mother, all of his stupid high school fantasies came rushing back. Iris was cuddling next to him in his pickup. He was kissing her on New Year's Eve. He was having incredible sex with just her hair, somehow. Before his nightly midget porn masturbation session, Too Tall scoured Facebook for Iris's profile. No luck. She was hidden. Every time he worked the door, Too Tall considered getting a tattoo on his neck that read 6'10", never played basketball, never rode a plane. He made the stool he sat on look comically small. If he heard someone was using in the bathroom stalls, he just walked in, listened for sniffling, and peered over the barriers. The regulars he let in for free. On the weekends, the smart fellas gave him a $10 tip along with the cover charge, and Too Tall found them spots in the pit near the stage. The underage kids gave him a 20 just to get in the door. He turned around on a stool when Iris came on stage to Mustang Sally. All conversation ceased. She removed her red bedazzled bra as she rolled over. She pulled herself up the pole using only her legs. She danced the way Brian Urlacher played football, with a terrifying devotion. She did the worm very slowly and Too Tall winced because the stage wasn't exactly sanitary. There were regulars about to burst into tongues. O'Leary was standing, his hands resting on top of his head like he was Moses watching the burning bush. Harrison chewed on the gold chain hanging around his neck. After she finished, there was a bidding war. Everyone wanted to dance with Iris. O'Leary flashed a roll of 20s in Too Tall's direction. Bunny got on stage and did her best routine, a can-can thing that was pretty funny, well, with her one leg, but no one paid her any mind. Harrison told Too Tall to hunt down Iris and get her to start on the private dances. He found her in the dressing room in front of her mirror. Trails of glitter ran down her back from the sweat. "You're going to make a lot of money tonight," he said. "I'm not going back out there." Too Tall scratched the back of his neck. "Why not?" "They'll want me all the more tomorrow. In Los Angeles, you don't ever give it all up the first night." He swept cigarette wrappers, plastic straws, and the odd piece of gum into a plastic dustpan, careful not to tip over any cups or cans sitting on the floor because they were usually full of chew. O'Leary had Iris cornered, his arms folded across his chest, his sleeves rolled up to display a bright, shiny watch, and the way he leaned over her with his planet-sized cranium gave the whole scene a fairy tale quality, like a troll attempting to lure away a pretty young virgin. Except, of course, what Iris wasn't all that young, and she sure as shit wasn't a virgin. Too Tall had almost asked her out 100 times, only to stop himself, terrified, unable to form the words. A girl like Iris would never go for him. Too Tall McElroy with his Klingon teeth and job working the door at a strip club in the middle of Conagra soy fields. O'Leary brought her flowers every night. Chad Hersey, who owned not only the AutoZone in town, but also the one out in Mattoon, gave her a tortoiseshell necklace he bought during his stay at an all-inclusive hotel in Puerto Vallarta. But her suitors didn't mean Too Tall couldn't at least dream, and dream he did. He liked imagining Iris in bed, drinking white wine with ice, reading something by Mitch Albom. Bunny asked him if he was still coming over after work. She was rewatching Felicity in preparation for the upcoming reboot, and he'd gotten sucked in. He told her he'd drive over after he finished his closing duties. Out of habit, he checked out her ass when she walked away, but she was wearing baggy sweatpants. The two of them were strictly friends, except for the handful of times they had fallen on each other in the early morning half-drunk light. Too Tall supposed that technically they were friends with benefits, though the phrase had the sulfuric tang of sinfulness. Harrison was in the back counting the money and organizing all of the credit card slips, the light from his office shining on the glitter-encrusted floor. Little puddles of black mop water had pooled in the laminate's crevices. Too Tall was wiping down the bar when Iris approached him. "Hey there, Too Tall," she said. "What are you up to tonight?" A muscle below his mouth that he did not know existed until that very moment began to twitch uncontrollably. "Nothing," he said. "I mean, I'm going home. I'm not staying here all night. That would be weird, wouldn't it, staying here all night?" Iris tilted her head to the right, obviously confused. If evolution had not wound the knowledge into his genes, Too Tall would have forgotten how to breathe. "My car won't start," she said. "I was wondering if you could give me a ride home." "O'Leary didn't want to take you?" "I didn't ask him." A ray of light escaped from the heavens and enveloped Too Tall in its warm embrace. He didn't bother finishing his closing duties. And then, as if by magic, he was opening the door and helping Iris into his truck. He wanted to do laps around the high school with the windows down, every click witnessing his proximity to the prettiest stripper in all of Embrough County. They drove over the 20th Street Bridge, where neighborhood kids like to throw watermelons and stolen lawn furniture into the Whitewater Creek below. He was about to turn down her street when Iris asked if he wanted to go out by the softball fields. Too Tall whipped his truck around before she had the chance to change her mind. They leaned against the cab, sitting on top of an open sleeping bag. The night sky went on forever against the massive hut figures of the grain silos, and past those was the runway of lights from I-57. Iris talked about all sorts of things. How a lot of directors wanted her to audition, but most of them were snakes. How in LA everything was so fake. How there were only 2 seasons, summer and January. Sort of as an afterthought, she asked Too Tall why he worked at the Cow. "Do you just love seeing tits all the time?" "Well, the perks ain't bad," he said. "Honestly, after my mom died, I got saddled with some bills that would make your head spin. Harrison helped me out. I kind of just stayed." "I know that feeling," she said. "But I think there's something else. I think you like protecting people." Too Tall thought on that and decided Iris was probably right. Using his giant body as a barrier was about the only thing that came to him naturally. For what felt like an eternity, but was probably closer to 10 minutes, they sat together in silence, and he could feel the hairs on his arms reaching out to touch her skin, like cactus needles leaping at body heat. He took her home and waited until she was safely inside the house before driving away. Back at his apartment, he sprawled out on his bed, a pair of twin mattresses he duct taped together end to end. He texted an apology to Bunny, and then he wondered how Iris drank her coffee, if she wanted a big wedding, things like that. Too Tall was working the front when Frank came in. Frank delivered mail and liked to show off his calves by wearing cargo shorts. He tipped well and didn't cause problems, except for occasionally blacking out and stumbling around. His wife had been dead 3 years after her car hit a patch of black ice and slid into Lake Owaka. They say she was frozen solid when they fished her out. He found an empty booth for private dances and then waved Iris over. A couple of songs passed, and then she ran to Too Tall. "That asshole is a prick," she said. "Frank? Frank's all right. Comes in all the time." "No, he's not all right," she said. She wagged her finger at Frank, who was making his way over to them, removing his trucker hat and smoothing back his hair. "Frank owes me $60. I worked him for 5 songs, and it's $20 a song. He only gave me 40. Too Tall knew for a fact 5 songs had not passed. Frank held out his hands in supplication. "It was 2.5 songs, Too Tall," he said. "I'll give her an even 50. Normally, I don't get charged for half a song, but whatever." He pulled out his wallet. Too Tall saw that he had plenty of cash. He could feel Iris boring a hole into his head with her eyes. In about the loudest voice he ever used with a regular, Too Tall told Frank to hand Iris the money. He shook his head in disbelief and then handed Iris 320s. "Pleasure doing business," she said. Frank spit on the floor and walked out of the club. Too Tall told himself that there were plenty of Franks and only one Iris. She kissed him on the cheek. After closing, he expected Iris to, at the very least, give him a kiss goodnight. She left without saying a word. He couldn't figure out that woman for nothing. Originally, Lefty's had 2 bars, one upstairs and another downstairs, but then the city condemned the upstairs bar because it was a windstorm away from collapsing. The downstairs bar looked like a church basement. Plastic chairs and tables topped with formica held on for dear life atop the scarred linoleum floor. The place was decent during the week and a great place to get stabbed by a methed-out neo-Nazi on the weekends. The crew went there on Mondays, the only day of the week the cow was closed. Harrison was all over Iris out on the patio, leaning in close like her aura held the secret to everlasting life, like her genitalia possessed healing powers. O'Leary was out there too. Someone must have told him that Iris was out in the wild. He was bowing rounds, but Too Tall bought his own beers. He was playing cornhole with Bunny on a set that featured the St. Louis Cardinals on one board and the Chicago Cubs on the other. About halfway through the game, Bunny said, "You look at Iris like she's Christmas morning." "I don't know what you're talking about," said Too Tall. "You should tread carefully. I don't trust her. There's something off." A desire to defend Iris welled up inside him. He wanted to tell Bunny what she could do with the skinny metallic leg she was wearing. What's tread carefully supposed to mean? "I just don't want to see you get hurt. That's all. I can take care of myself. And what's it to you, anyway?" She threw her last bag overhand so hard it nearly cracked the board. The bag split open along the seam and spilled its guts. "Don't be an asshole," she said. "It doesn't suit you." After about his 4th drink, Iris still surrounded by the twin grasping desires of Harrison and O'Leary, Too Tall got brave. He went inside and messed with a newfangled iTunes player that reminded him of Star Trek. He put in enough money to make sure his song came on next. As soon as he heard the first notes of Moondance, he walked over to Iris and extended his hand. O'Leary and Harrison both laughed, but Iris got out of her chair. "This should be good," said O'Leary. "Watch out for his feet, honey." Too Tall counted the beat in his head because what they all didn't know was that when his mother was sick, he danced with her every night to all sorts of music, swaying back and forth in their living room, floating between the television stand and the waist-high ceramic planter shaped like an elephant. Too Tall and Iris glided past empty beer bottles and deftly avoided plastic patio furniture. He swirled her and then winked at Harrison and O'Leary. Harrison looked like he was witnessing a double axe murder. O'Leary wasn't paying much mind because Bunny had placed her rear end right in his lap. Later that night, Iris and Too Tall kissed by his truck. Normally, his teeth got in the way, but somehow her mouth formed the perfect union with his own. A week later, they went to a bar called the Uptowner and saw a young singer-songwriter from St. Louis who got blacked out drunk on gin and tonics before he could finish his second set. Too Tall was about to drive Iris home when she asked him if he had any beers at his place, and he said yes, and she said that sounded good, and he drove as fast as he could without obviously driving as fast as he could and dropped his keys twice on the way to his apartment door. Iris drenched her popcorn in butter when they went to the movies. Dutal always ruined his frozen yogurt with too many toppings, and then he would ask Iris for a bite of hers, which she would refuse. He paid for everything, even though Iris probably made more money, because that's what a man was supposed to do. They went to the open mic night at the Stovepipe Cafe and listened with heartfelt attention to all the people with just enough talent to never escape. But sometimes when they went out to the softball fields, Iris would get swallowed up by the eerie blue light of her phone. She rarely spent the night, blaming his makeshift mattress for hurting her back. When he offered to come to her place, she said it was too messy. She started pulling the Frank trick enough to be a regular occurrence, but not so often that Harrison found out. Even if he did, he wouldn't fire his best dancer. Tutal was more worried about the other girls learning the score and causing trouble. Not to mention the whole thing challenged his self-perception as the type of person Lynyrd Skynyrd sings about in Simple Man. They were at Buffalo Wild Wings one Monday night watching the Bears get destroyed by the Seahawks when he tried to clear the air. There was something about John Gruden's raspy common sense advice and horrible haircut that gave him courage. "Can I ask you a question?" he said. "Did it hurt when I fell from heaven? Why do you keep doing that thing with the dances? Are you on meth?" She gave him the side eye and then fished for the best fries on the plate. "No, Tutal, I'm not on meth." She took a swig of her beer. "I'm getting what I'm worth. From now on, I'm always going to get exactly what I'm worth." Richard Sherman snagged an interception in the red zone and returned to 25 yards. John Gruden kept repeating how Jay Cutler made a terrible decision, an awful, no good, terrible decision. O'Leary and his crew came in like they owned the place. Tutal and Bunny filled three buckets with ice and packed Red Bulls in two of them and a fifth of Grey Goose in the other. O'Leary reached behind the bar and grabbed the Cuervo. He removed the spout and drank straight from the bottle. "Tonight I want Iris," he said. Tutal relayed the message and then went to the basement and changed a keg of Coors Light. Back at the bar, he tried to strike up a conversation with Bunny, but she was busy scoping the crowd for easy prey. Then Iris ran to him like her G-string was on fire. "O'Leary owes me $100, she said. Tutal bit his lip. "Steve O'Leary, you're sure?" "Yeah, I'm sure, Tutal." O'Leary practically kept the lights on at the cow, so this was a tricky situation, and Tutal hated tricky situations. He trudged up to the VIP section, Iris in tow. He had to stand directly in his line of sight before O'Leary acknowledged him. "You don't make such a great window, Tutal," he said. "Iris says you owe her $100. "I do owe her $100. "See?" yelled Iris. Tutal looked down at O'Leary. He felt like he was speaking a foreign language. "Then give her the money." "Yeah, asshole, give me my money," said Iris. "Do you know we all call you mascot head behind your back? If this was LA, they'd break your kneecaps." O'Leary drank his beer and scratched his crotch. "I'll pay her as soon as she gives back the cash she's been taking from the guys who work for me." Iris folded her arms across her chest and stuck her hip out. Tutal felt like melting into the floor with shame. The worst part was getting called out by frickin' Steve O'Leary. And then Harrison arrived. "Everything all right up there?" he asked. "I think we're doing just fine," said O'Leary, "getting everything figured out." "Good," said Harrison, "because there's about to be a fight out front." Tutal had never been more thankful for a brawl. He ran outside. It took him a while to get the one group of drunk redneck assholes separated from the other group of drunk redneck assholes, but he managed to do it without hurting anyone or getting hurt himself, and no one called the sheriff. He went back inside and searched for Iris. He was in the dressing room when Bunny tapped him on the arm. "She left," she said, "about 5 minutes ago." "Where'd she go?" "I don't know. She walked out with O'Leary." He nearly collapsed from heart failure. Was he forcing her? Was he carrying her? Bunny looked at him like he rode the short bus. "No, Tutal," she said. "He definitely wasn't carrying her." For the next few days at the cow, Iris accomplished a near impossible feat. She ignored Tutal entirely. She slipped away from the bar when he approached her with a shot of Jameson. She hid out back with the smokers during her breaks. She left early, telling Harrison she didn't feel well. Tutal texted her, offering to bring her soup or those sour watermelon gummies she loved. She said she just wanted to sleep. She stopped coming in for her shifts. She stopped returning his calls. The first two times he went by her house, no one was home. The third time he saw O'Leary's Kelly Green Escalade parked in the driveway. The night Harrison told him that she had officially quit, Tutal drank half a bottle of Jameson and imagined beating O'Leary to death with Iris's unconscious body. Instead, he did what he always did when depressed. He binged on Walter Payton highlight videos. He was in the middle of watching the Super Bowl shuffle for the fifth time when inspiration hit him like Walter through an A-gap. Number 34 never gave up, and neither would he. He repeated to himself that courage wasn't the absence of fear. At least O'Leary's car wasn't in the driveway, so he would have Iris alone. He knocked on her door. He saw her peek through her blinds, and then heard her curse. She was wearing a pink robe. "Tutal, I'm sorry, but just hear me out," he said. He took out his phone. He pulled up the email confirming the reservations and handed it to her. What's this? He loved how she squinted when she read. He loved the tiny points at the top of her ears. He loved how she had to reach up to hold his hand when they walked to Kiwanis Park. 2 flights to Los Angeles, he said, and I booked us a weekend at the Hollywood Hotel. We can go to the beach. You can show me that bar you love in Venice City. An Antarctic wind rustled the naked trees. O'Leary appeared behind Iris. Too tall felt small, impossibly small. It's called Venice Beach, said O'Leary. Everyone knows that. I think it's time for you to go. Iris handed him back the phone. Too tall, I'm sorry. You're a good person. I hope we can still be friends. It's non-refundable, said Too Tall. O'Leary closed the door. Too Tall heard the deadbolt slide into place. The walk back to his truck was the loneliest thing. His hands were shaking so bad that he could barely get the key in the ignition. The worst part was feeling like he never even had the chance to win. It was the dead ends. He sat there letting his truck idle, and then he drove to Bunny's place. He sent a text after he pulled up to her building. She came downstairs to open the door, and he followed her into her apartment. Bunny popped open 2 bottles of Coors Light and handed one to him. They sat on her couch, and he gave her a rundown of what happened. When he was done, he said, I bet you're dying to say I told you so. I ain't dying to say anything, she said. They sat there drinking beer for a minute, and then she took off her sweatpants and unclasped the leg from her thigh. Bunny, I appreciate it, but I'm not really in the mood. Too Tall, do me a favor and shut the hell up. She climbed onto his lap, facing away from him. She moved with a slow, professional precision. She took his right hand and guided it down to her stump, letting him massage the muscle and flesh, the bone's unflinching hardness. She reached back and ran her hand through his hair and then down his cheek, and finally she slid her fingers past his lips. She caressed his ragged teeth like he had a mouth full of pearls. Thank you.